Hello, and welcome to an AFR and FDH collab, where today we are starting something very exciting. We've been looking forward to this for years, for quite a while. We didn't think we were going to get it. But today, myself, Rick Morris, come to you to break down Justified, City Primeval. So we've literally been waiting this long for it to come out and be a thing, and now today we're going to get into it. So, want to take a moment and introduce Mr. Rick Morris.
Thank you, Jason. Very psyched to be here for this. And again, anybody looking at you can see with your hat, me with my outfit as per usual for the Red Wings. I've even got my stuffed Red Wings, my octopus here. It's a Detroit theme, so we're dressing for the occasion. At least that's what I say as an excuse to dress in Red Wings paraphernalia, which I do all the time.
I was going to say, I don't know that we need to give you an excuse for that, but...
That's true. Yes.
I do enjoy that we took that direction, and that will be an ongoing theme throughout.
And I know we're going to make the Justified fans happy, as we did, covering season five and season six in 2014 and 2015 in the FDH Lounge. We did those in real time. We're doing our own analysis here in real time of episodes one and two of City Primeval. And again, there's nothing quite like the immediacy of the post-game show, so to speak. This is one of the things we first envisioned with the start of the FDH Lounge back in 2007. We were talking about this, about possibly doing some TV events and live analysis. The entire premise of the FDH Lounge was to do that, was to treat everything like we analyze sports. And you're doing an excellent job with that with the AFR brand as well. So it's great to be able to come together again, put the band back together, break down Justified. It's been way too long, buddy. They should have brought this to us earlier.
Oh, absolutely. And I have to, we can't go any further without me mentioning this. And this is probably true for anyone in Rick Morris's immediate circle. When Rick Morris recommends a show, watch it. Because Rick, yes. You were hitting me for Justified for, I believe, at least two seasons, maybe three. And I just kept, I was doing what everybody else was doing. You read the synopsis and you're like, U.S. Marshal in Kentucky, backwoods hollers just in my thing. Justified, mm-hmm. not what we're about to do, but the original series, I still, in 2023, say is one of the top five best all-around dramas to come out in the last 20 years, at minimum. We can have an argument or discussion about where it falls in line with things like, The Wire and Sopranos and stuff like that. But even it's right after that. If we want to accept that there are three or four shows that are everyone's top five, Justified is right after that. And we're going to get into some of the differences, because there are differences. But this absolutely is something that we've both been very excited about, waiting for a very long time.
Yes.
So very excited to bring this to you. And like you mentioned, Rick, we are going to try to do this as consistently to the post-game vibe as possible. That's why I hate to do it to you, but it's why it's 1 o'clock in the morning where you are and you're doing this. So,
why FX did it this way, I have no idea. I mean, the business model appears to be they're acting like, oh, we're getting a sneak preview of a Hulu show that's going up tomorrow. It's like 12:30 in the East. Like what is this? Monday Night Football circa 2006? I don't understand what we're doing. And by the way, too, as far as the roots of you watching Justified, it's mildly kind of depressing that we still have to kayfabe what this is in a part of years later, but I don't think we're going to have to kayfabe it for too much longer. A long story short, a writing project here, and you had an idea for a character, and you said to me that you would like to base the character off of Mark Harmon, and I said to you at the time, I said, make him Jacob Pitts. He plays kind of like a young Mark Harmon on this show. I sent you one clip, and you not only bent it in that direction on this writing project, you were hooked. You were like, I have to watch Justified now because of this Tim Patterson, who was a side character in Justified. But he hooked you on that, and it was just like, I didn't think one recommendation like that for a character thing on a writing project could possibly have made you a Justified fan for life, and it did.
Yeah.
That's an amazing story.
Yeah, no, what's interesting about that is specifically to Gutterson, he's in maybe a third of the episodes?
Probably.
But it's one of those things that when you see that character and the way he just sort of floats through the scene, and mm-hmm. I don't remember exactly what it was. Was it the apricot scene?
It was, no, it was in Art Mullen's office. I can't carry a tune. I can't dribble a basketball.
The basketball thing.
I don't miss. That's the thing that hooked you for life, buddy.
Yeah.
I sent you this. I just wanted you to have the flavor of Tim Gutterson / Jacob Pitts. You saw this, and you were hooked, and you needed to watch Justified, and you fell down the rabbit hole. And then you caught up through season 4, and then I was like, hey, when it comes back, let's be doing this. And you came up with the idea of, we're going to do it. Let's go live. Let's do it right afterwards. Well, we recorded live anyways. We're recording live now. And yeah, I mean, it was a beautiful thing. We went through it, and it's a thing where, and as we go through and we break this down, and I mean, we admittedly are very big fanboys, but it's a thing where I think at the time with season 5, there were some analysis pieces out there that we took issue with because of the nature of the harshness. But I mean, and clearly in retrospect, season 5, that's the one everybody kind of puts at the bottom of their season lists for Justified. We hoped that season 6 would get better. I think it was arguably the best. To me, it's between 6 and 4. But and I think 2 is very close behind. But it's a thing where we're not going to be afraid, we're not going to be fearful of elements of this, of mentioning that. There's fanboy shows that will and that won't do that. And we're not going to be ones that shy away from that. And we're not going to be gratuitous, I don't think, because we're not bashers. We love the franchise. But sometimes you point out things in the betterment of hopefully the franchise taking a better direction in the next episode or the next stretch or whatever the case may be. And along these lines, I do have a thought, and this is one that I had teased to you off air that I think may prove a little bit surprising to you, because, again, I'm not generally a Pollyanna about such things. But one of the things we picked up on with City Primeval, two big things jumping out here, and they are language and they are sexual content. And as far as the sex scene that we saw relatively early on in the pilot, and the language that consistently has gone in there. Now, as you said to me off air, it wasn't Raylan himself dropping F-bombs, which would be a little bit jarring. The only concern that I have, and it's pretty clear this is going to be the case probably throughout the rest of the season. We're already a quarter of the way through the season, if you can believe it. It's 8 episodes. We've seen 2 now. That I'm always concerned when there's anything that I love that I want more people to be able to see is if it's going to be off-putting, and I hope it doesn't potentially narrow the appeal too much. I mean, you might broaden the appeal. Clearly, they're thinking they're going to broaden the appeal in some ways, and it's very interesting. We talked off air. FX at the time owned by Fox, now it's owned by Disney. You wouldn't think it would make much of a difference in standards and practices, but clearly it has. Clearly, they're being a little bit more liberalized here on this. I've also noticed that Sony has had a little bit more liberal use of language in recent years as well. So that's maybe an overall thing with FX in recent years. I just hope that it doesn't make it more of a niche product than it might already otherwise be.
No, it's a very valid concern, actually. There's a balance to be struck there, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And the problem is, and I've got a great analogy that's not going to make any sense.
Okay.
You ready?
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite, like, you can call it a guilty pleasure movie, but even people within those circles believe it to be one of the greatest parody movies, if not one of the best Star Trek movies, and that's Galaxy Quest.
Okay.
Tim Allen, Alan Rickman, it's literally a parody of a Star Trek film. It's very, very, very solid. Now, for anyone that's seen that, there's a moment in the last 10 minutes,
mm-hmm.
where Tim Allen and Sigourney Weaver are running through the belly of this ship trying to find this thing. And because the premise of the movie is that aliens found the broadcast and assumed that it was real and then made technology to make it real.
Mm-hmm.
So they're running through this, and there's all kinds of crazy stuff going on that makes no sense. And Sigourney Weaver says, why is all this here? Why are we doing this?
Mm-hmm.
And literally drops an F-bomb.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, the studio wanted this to be like a Tim Allen Santa Claus movie. They thought it was going to be silly and for kids and stuff.
Uh-huh.
So they said, you got to take the F out. But to kind of stick it to them, they took the F out, but you can see her say, and there's a documentary about this movie. It's wonderful. It's just a little over an hour. Anyway, they talked to the cast about the version that we didn't get. Mm-hmm. It was a little bit more profanity. And every last one of them basically looked dead in the camera and said, if that F-bomb prevents people from watching it, it's not worth having. If you do something that prevents people from watching, that's a negative move. Mm-hmm. And that there is a sense that I'm a little bit worried that that's what this is going to become.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like we were saying off air, if this becomes a thing where there's 5 or 6 F-bombs an episode, or not that I minded, but if we're getting sort of gratuitous sexual activity, eventually it is going to start phasing people out.
Yeah.
Especially if they came up in the original series.
Yeah. They're going to be like, you know, what's this? The thing that was supposed to be the reboot on Skinamax? I mean, I don't want it to be getting to be that kind of a vibe here, but you know, it is interesting in that sense. Again, similarities and differences, and you and I had talked about this, that again, the judge character, maybe weird in some ways, kind of like, you know, the Stephen Root judge character, Judge Mike Reardon from Justified. And again, great character actors in both instances, because yeah, Stephen Root is like first ballot Hall of Fame in this, and this other gentleman, Mr. David here, is not far behind, if at all.
You had mentioned that first.
Mm-hmm.
That these two feel like they might be, not necessarily that they're similar, but that from a direction standpoint, they both looked at this and said, we need a character that's just a little bit out of place.
Yes.
That just feels a little bit off.
Yep.
As a judge. Mm-hmm. And until his demise, I was actually really, I don't want to say impressed, but I really liked what Keith David was doing with that judge character.
Yes. Yes, I mean, he's an excellent one. Like, and it's funny because like you texted me like when he came on, and I'm like, I knew you'd pop for that guy. Like when he was on there, like I didn't go for that. Like we know each other so well on these things, and it's just a great fit for the show.
I don't expect you to have an answer for this, but do you have any idea where the Keith David thing started for me?
I don't.
He is the original voice of Goliath from the animated cartoon Gargoyles. He was the father in Something About Mary, where he's trying to get the twigs and berries back in, which I thought was hilarious.
Oh, that's him!
So, yeah, he's got a wonderful list of credits.
Right.
And I've liked almost everything he's ever done. I would say the only time I didn't like him, and it's totally beholden to the plot of the story, is he was the, like, Players Association rep.
Mm-hmm.
In the movies The Replacements, you only see him in the first couple minutes, but he's the one that's talking about the incoming scabs.
And that's anyway. Thing, I mean, both of those guys, both him and Stephen Root, you could sort of put them in the category of, since we're talking prestige TV here with a show like this, of sort of being each of them kind of like the Bryan Cranston of character actors, because both of those guys have such a range of things that they can do. Yeah. Cranston, Meryl Streep, again, there's so few that can go outside their wheelhouse. Like, I always talk about this, like, with Aaron Paul, with that. Like, I enjoyed him greatly.
You're so close.
Yes. Since we're talking about Hulu here, The Path. Yeah. I watched him on The Path, and it was excellent. But it was like an Aaron Paul-type character. Like,
you were getting dangerously close.
Okay.
Dangerously, and I was waiting for it.
Okay.
I was expecting a Bob Odenkirk reference.
Bob Odenkirk, oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah. And that's, well, and again, you wouldn't have said that about him before Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul, but now you would.
No.
Like,
I would not have.
And what movies he's been in the last couple of years. I can't think of the names of all of them, but, you know, he's been in movies that have really kind of showed his range and kind of expanded. There, yeah. So Odenkirk's another guy. And again, I'm a huge mark for his. As somebody from that franchise, and you know, yeah, it's to see these guys in the universe of Justified is quite a thing. As it is to see Timothy Oliphant's real life daughter playing his daughter in her cinematic debut. I know you were kind of blown away when I mentioned that to you before we started watching, and it's a thing where I've already read one review. I was glancing at a review while the setup was being done here, and there was, I think it was on IGN. And they kind of bagged on her a little bit. Like, she seems a little wooden and everything like that. I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, she's supposed to play kind of an awkward teen. I thought she nailed it. I mean, it's how polished is she supposed to be in that role? As far as it goes with Raylan and Winona, they got the daughter they deserved. Because those two, each of them with a wild hair up their ass, they got the pain in the ass daughter they deserved, Jason. I think we can all agree with that.
I mean, I didn't get that at all. Like, just riffing off the review. Mm-hmm. I got no sense of that.
Yeah.
Because, yes, while you're watching her, and she's got some mannerisms, they're acting choices.
Sure.
So, yes, before I get there, yes, there's a part of you, if you're watching and you have an understanding for Justified before that,
mm-hmm.
you're watching her behaviors,
yep.
and to your point,
yeah.
you are saying absolutely that is Raylan and Winona's kid.
Yes.
Without question.
Yes.
Now, what's interesting, I find it curious that you mentioned the review,
mm-hmm.
because there's a point later in the second episode
mm-hmm.
where she's just in the hotel room,
mm-hmm.
doesn't like the news she's gotten, and she kind of does this fall back onto the bed.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a moment where I thought, somebody's going to rip this girl, the actor, and at this moment, I don't think she could play it better.
I don't get it. I mean, and that's a thing where I think it's nitpicky. I don't want to assign any kind of motive to it. I don't want to say that, like, the person was necessarily being mean or anything. I don't agree with the take because, again, there's a thing where, I mean, here's the thing. If she was a little bit older, if it was like, let's say she's playing like as a 21-year-old, that's the thing where you expect a little bit more polish in the role because somebody should be a little more polished at that age. She's playing a somewhat awkward teenager and somebody yeah. who's, you know, kind of a smart ass and everything like that. Like, are we really going to say that, like, you know, are you supposed to play Meryl Streep at that age? Because if you are, you're not nailing the role right. You're not nailing the character. I mean, that's
better
to play an awkward teen than somebody that's a teen in real life and may or may not be awkward, or probably at least knows people who are, or could get coached on it. So I didn't agree with that part of it. And, it's as far as, like, you could picture, both of the parents here when you look at her and some of the trouble they got into, you can absolutely picture that.
If Timothy Oliphant's daughter is playing sort of, as we're talking about characters that are sort of a similar vein,
mm-hmm.
if she was supposed to play an Ava type,
yes.
who's in her mid-20s,
yes.
then yeah, it should be done differently.
Yes.
But the one part that really got me with the daughter and the relationship, and there's a part of me that has got to believe that what we saw is the result of the chemistry when father and daughter are acting in the same space.
Mm-hmm.
But when, and again, we're talking about the second episode now, when Clemens is sitting with his daughter,
mm-hmm.
and Raylan knows this is not good.
Yeah.
And he basically says, okay, I need you to leave and go to the hotel room now.
Mm-hmm.
There's a look that Raylan gives her that is so beautiful. Such a good acting stroke.
Yeah.
Part of me thinks little Oliphant has yes. gotten that look before in real life.
Yes, yeah.
So that just added to the whole, not the mystery because we know who she is, but just that dynamic that you believe 100% yeah. that's Raylan's daughter.
Yeah.
Period.
And then Clement, when he was when they were outside the hotel, and he made the crack about if we were in Kentucky, I'd be tapping that ass right now. Well, it could have been a little method acting on those punches.
Oh yeah, yeah, absolutely. That is something that goes back to Justified.
Yeah,
is there are moments like when Patton Oswalt yeah. has been messed up. Because he let the bad guys go to town because he wasn't going to roll over on Raylan. When Raylan figures that out, there's a moment where you believe in your soul that Raylan Givens is altered by the news he just heard. Again, as we're talking about similarities, there are things here that cross over a little bit, and it's fantastic.
Right.
But I will say that, and this is, have you seen John Wick?
I haven't. So the references are lost on me. I don't know the franchise.
You don't need to watch it. I do think that when you get some free time, you might want to binge the whole movie series. Okay. This is another movie where people told me, you got to watch it. You got to watch it. And I'm like, it's Keanu Reeves killing people. Like, how great is that? It's actually pretty freaking great. When Clement says that, says the Kentucky bit about your daughter and the age and tapping that ass,
mm-hmm.
my immediate thought was, you are threatening John Wick's dog right now. So if you're going to attack Raylan Givens' daughter, or God forbid if Wynonna or somebody else comes up in the mix, I'm going to have the same feeling every time.
Right.
Raylan is going to go roughshod over whoever is threatening his daughter.
The real 50,000-foot view here is bad guy who comes along, kills the judge that they were investigating the previous attack on, and now all this other stuff that he's done is potentially going to be coming to light, and then he's there at the end of the episode. So some of the previews that I've read about here, the non-spoiler, you know, blurbs that some of the various media outlets have put out, have basically said this is your sort of counterpoint for Boyd Crowder, and that you can see in this some similarities as far as the sort of native genius that the guy has in some ways,
or
maybe recklessness in other ways. But I think what this is meant to be is not necessarily an alternate universe Boyd, but a Boyd who is devoid of, because again, what's the term? And I used it in the recent spoiler-free review that I did of Justified for the FDH Lounge. The term, it's a cliche, but the frenemy. I mean, Raylan would probably say more enemy than friend, and sure, probably heavier on that side of the equation, but what was the last line of the Justified series? We dug coal together. And that was the heart of the relationship between those two. Again, they grew up, their dads were, you know, criminals, you know, with the Crowder family kind of, you know, employed Arlo and everything like that, but they were the kids that were coming up in the crime families. Boyd stuck with it. And Raylan left town and went on his own path with the Marshal Service. But I feel like this is a version of Boyd that is devoid of anything that, and again, as much as Raylan might, even if you put a gun to his head, might deny that there was any warmth towards Boyd, but that would be a lie, because there was always at least a little bit of, you know, maybe the last season he didn't have to work too hard to hate the guy, but leading up to that, it was always at least a little bit conflicted, right? This is just like if you had a Boyd Crowder and they were just like arch enemies, and it was Superman and Lex Luthor, and it was one of those kind of deals. And it's a thing where this guy is different enough from Boyd that I'm having a hard time picturing here, and I feel like I could go either way on this. I'm going to ask you what you think, and I'll go with whatever you think. All right, this is an intriguing what-if scenario. If Boyd and this guy ever crossed paths and he saw this guy menacing Raylan's daughter, I think Boyd might have had a little bit more fondness for Raylan than vice versa. I'm not getting carried away here and saying that he loved him like a brother or anything. What do you think?
I don't think Boyd asks a question. I think he straight up pummels that dude's face on spec just because he knows who the daughter is.
Okay.
There was a sense, and a little bit more Boyd for Raylan than Raylan for Boyd.
Mm-hmm.
But I definitely get the sense that in that moment,
mm-hmm.
Boyd would have saw it as his responsibility
mm-hmm.
to at least squash that out and ask questions later. I don't think he sees that and keeps walking.
Yeah, and that's what I'm thinking. It's the daughter of the guy he dug coal with. You ever watch Bullet? I mean, it's an amazing movie.
From the 70s?
1968, baby.
Yeah, okay. It's been a while.
Okay. But it's one of those things where, and I got a sense in watching this, and it's one of the things that just really impresses me about a project when I see this. It feels like you're watching one story, and then after that attack, another story's playing out. And I just really admired the ability to make the viewer, maybe it was just that I got so sucked into what the story was. The same thing kind of hit me here, because when Clement, he's tailing the mark, and they're getting ready to, you know, chase him and whatever would have happened to him subsequently. And the thing with the judge, when he's coming out of the garage here, when he started following the judge, And it was just like, and at first I was puzzled as to why. And, you know, you said off air, it must have just been, he must have figured this was another rich guy, another potential target, basically from the car. But it's like, it felt like they were telling one story, and then now this other thing happened. And it's like, and obviously that was the script, but it's like, that's the mark of a great project. When they can suck you in and they can make you believe it was supposed to go this way, and then something unexpected happened and they had to write it another way. It was just...
At some point, we are going to have a conversation about AI, and it's a whole unrelated thing to this. And then that in part with the Screen Actors Guild and then the actor's strike, we'll just call it. This is one of those things that I believe is going to get missed in this whole AI in movies conversation. That's the result of a quality writer's room.
Yes.
Now, you can tell a computer that here's what we want, and they can spit out something that works. However, I don't want to include you in this, but I'd like to say you and I both know that there's a process there where somebody's going down the Albanian casino, going down that path. And we know what that is. And literally, they laid out a trope that we all can go, okay, I know what happens next.
Yeah.
They did that so beautifully and then just pivoted.
Right.
And the only way I think you get that is a bunch of writers are working on the Albanian casino hit line, and then somebody just goes, hey, what if we did this?
Yeah, a robot wouldn't do that. God, that's...
No.
What a perfect point by you. What an amazing point. Very timely, like you said, for what's going on now, because AI is a concern on both the writer's strike and the actor's strike side of this, and the way that that can possibly play into it. This is the human touch. This is the human touch writ large, going back to Elmore Leonard and the way that it went. And again, the whole Primeval novel that he had done, or short story. So I don't know how much of the specifics of what we saw tonight was lifted from that. It was a lot it was adapted. It's possible Elmore Leonard had that twist in. I don't know. And this is the thing here, too, and this is the thing that just shows you how great of a grasp Oliphant and then Graham Yost also have on Elmore Leonard's work here, is that that is not a Raylan Givens novel, as I understand it. It was a novel based around other characters and stuff, but Timothy Oliphant, like, read it, and his quip to Rich Eisen was something like, hey, we could strip this for parts. The differences in the story here of basically playing Raylan as an older character, which, by the way, this is one of these I love whenever I can slip in any kind of super nerdy kind of point that nobody else is going to make in the world here. So the world of Justified, you could kind of pin it down on the time frame here, 2010 to 2012, because it was on until 2015. But if you look at the whole time frame here, the vast majority of the show was probably the time when Winona was pregnant, ironically, with this child here, because it was from towards the end of season two to, I think, she gave birth probably off air between seasons four and five. So I'm guessing about a two-year kind of a run, which is ironically what Breaking Bad was, 2010 to 2012. They're saying that this show is set 15 years in the future. So we're actually watching a futuristic show set in 2027. So it's a little depressing that I don't see hoverboards yet. Science is continuing to fail us here. We're not going to have hoverboards in 2027. And I'm very proud that that's probably not a point you're going to hear from anybody else. Only I'm enough of a justified nerd to pick up on that. Playing him like he's the aging gunslinger, and you know, and playing him in the whole fish out of water thing, because in that first thing, you know, he's in that courtroom there, and they're trying to take the things that he did, because he said something like, "You were going to put this black person in the trunk, a white person in the trunk too." All these things he did in down there in Harlem, nobody was ever going to call him a racist, because he was only ever going after, you know, the Peckerwoods of Harlan County. But you do that stuff up in Detroit, and it's a different context. So they're playing it all. I mean, he's older, he's grizzled, he's all these things, and he's in a place where being Raylan Givens isn't played as being cute and funny by the people in this urban setting.
No matter what the situation is, you're absolutely right. No one's going to say anything because they're backwood Peckerwood types, except Limehouse.
If
we go back to the Limehouse episodes, you understand from body language and tone, there's a sense that He's not going to handle it the same way. Yeah. So while I totally agree, the thing that's interesting here, yeah, Raylan's default position on the whole Trump thing is nobody's above getting put in the trunk.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a race thing,
yeah.
Which then leads me into another point that I definitely wanted to get. Mm-hmm. Lovely segue on your part.
Okay.
That Raylan Givens, as you mentioned, is the grizzled old gray gunslinger.
Mm-hmm.
Within, even if it's in Detroit, within law enforcement circles.
Mm-hmm.
How has nobody heard Raylan Givens?
True.
And how is when his name come up and you hear that he was going to put a guy in the trunk,
yeah.
How is their response not, yeah, that's a Raylan thing?
Yeah.
Now, I'm not being delusional in saying that every police precinct or every detective in every market knows everybody. But in this fictional world, you got to think that the guys in Detroit, especially since, if I'm not mistaken, Quarles and the whole... Remember there was a whole mob that Quarles came up from the north? Detroit.
Yeah, yes.
So Detroit should have known.
Yes, yes.
So the fact that the lawyer, who is getting on my last nerve already...
Yeah.
The fact that she's trying to pull these, like, very typical lawyer tricks with Raylan, like, parading him in the courtroom, like, yeah. You were going to put this black man... No. He'll put anybody in the trunk.
Right.
That's not... You can't make this a preferential treatment thing, because Raylan don't give a damn.
Right.
If he's told you to shut it up, and you don't, and you persist, his first move is not to hit you. It's not to handcuff you to something else. It's not to do anything like that. The next move is you're going in the trunk.
Yeah.
So on some small level, I feel like some of these Detroit cops should kind of know who Raylan is.
Yes.
But that's a choice that they made, and that's fine.
Well, and that would rise, I agree with you so strongly, that would rise to the level of a plot hole, except for one exculpatory detail that I'm going to bring up here. So let's just establish how right you are that in the world of law enforcement, this name should be known. You go back to the Drew Thompson thing here, and that yep. right there, that's a career maker, that's whatever, because it was the equivalent of D.B. Cooper. Whoever solved the D.B. Cooper case, we would know who they are. And then additionally, you go to season 6 at the end with Boyd Crowder, all the twists and turns, the manhunt of that thing, the choppers, all that stuff, and Raylan brings him in, and Raylan brings him in without firing a shot at him. You're absolutely right. The only thing I can say in defense of the writers here and that would not make this a plot hole is going back to my previous statement 15 years down the road. 15 years can be a while. Now,
oh, yeah.
I tend to agree with you. 15 years should not be long enough to where this guy would be, you know, not know. By the way, too, it being said in Detroit, there's potentially a third marker in your favor on that. And that is, now, again, I think Art Mullen ended up getting more credit than anybody else, but for bringing in who? Theo Tonin, big boss of the Detroit mob. But Raylan was right there on bringing in the big boss of the Detroit mob. One would think in that city, even 15 years later, it would be, you were one of the guys that brought in Theo Tonin. You are right. I have a hard time letting them off the hook for this. I'm playing devil's advocate, but I can't quite let them off the hook for what I think you've identified as a plot hole.
Again, it's a choice. It's fine. It's not a huge deal. But just in, even if we keep it to within movie TV realms, it's kind of like the notion that someone would not be familiar with Kevin Costner movie.
He
plays...
Yeah, the Untouchables?
Yeah, the Untouchables.
Elliot Ness.
You have Elliot Ness. It's yeah. like having someone as big as Capone, maybe not that big,
yeah.
but a figure like Capone, and then having Elliot Ness come from somewhere that's not there. He's in your neck of the woods, and he takes down Capone. That should be something on people's minds for probably the next quarter of a century. Yeah, I don't want anybody watching this to get the impression
mm-hmm.
that we are suggesting that we could make it better.
No.
Now, you and I both have written scripts, script Bibles, stuff, right? Like, we understand what the writing process is.
Yep.
And by no means want to belittle what they've done here. I saw an interview with Kevin Smith one time where he was asked... when does he know when the script is done? And his answer, which is pretty, pretty great, is a script is never done. It just reaches the point where I've revised it enough time that I am willing to give it to the studio.
Yep.
You ask a writer, there's no point where you can say, I'm done revising. There's always a revision to do.
Yep.
So, yeah, if the writers of this show were to spend 10 years on it,
mm-hmm.
you know, maybe these are questions that they would have addressed, or they would have come to the conclusion, you know, we're doing it this way for a reason.
Right.
And there's a very, very good possibility. We just haven't seen what the reason is yet.
Six episodes to go.
And so I don't want anyone to get confused and say we're nitpicking this or saying that we could do it better. Although, if you were going to take two people who have script writing experience and have an affection for Justified, I'd like to think we'd do a decent job. But by no means would we put ourselves ahead of the writers in that room.
With all due humility, I'd like to stick our hands in the air and volunteer to be in the room for if they do another limited series here. And that would be awesome.
There you go.
I wouldn't say no to that.
But I'd like to wait till the strike is over.
Exactly. I don't want to end a career that hasn't even gotten going yet in that realm. By the way, and I guess it's been taken down now, but the real scary Ron Perlman video, I'm sure
you
saw that over the weekend.
Did you get a chance to see it first?
Oh, yeah.
There are a lot of people in the world that would frighten me on some level.
Yes.
And then there are people that I don't ever want to be on the wrong side of. I watched that video three times before I figured out what he was talking about.
Yep.
Once I figured out who he was talking about, I went, oh, remind me to never piss off Ron Perlman. That is a person I do not want angry with me about anything. Nothing could happen, and I'm still losing sleep for a month if I'm Bob Iger.
I got secondhand fear. I wasn't the one being threatened, and I was like, oh, I just about pissed myself. I mean, look, thank God Justified City Primeval was in the can before this thing happened, and we were able to see this.
Mm-hmm. Technically, the fact that it was in the can and ready to go before the strike, that seems to be the consensus of where the line is, right? We aren't going to, you, me, anybody else that has any hopes of doing anything beyond the point you're at right now, no one in their right mind should be promoting anything that's yet to release.
Yes.
Seeing a lot of social media people out there getting excited because they're getting phone calls from producers.
Yeah.
Walk away, man. From Oppenheimer back is safe.
Yeah.
Everything post-Oppenheimer is just a bad idea.
Yes. And this is one of the best summers of TV that I can remember in a long, long time. I mean, having this as a crown jewel is just amazing. Because, again, we were seeing tonight as we were watching it here and going through all the ads and I was ragging on you about you get to see how the other half lives, having to sit through FX ads. But, you know, seeing ads on there for The Bear, which freaking awesome. I have loved season two with that.
I was afraid you were going to do this.
Yeah.
I knew this was coming.
That's another one. I'm giving you noogies here. I'm reaching out and giving you noogies that you got to watch The Bear. So
you, Rick Morris, prognosticator of quality television, I freaking knew you were going to tell me that I had to watch the next show I've been avoiding. Because here's the thing. There are millions of people who swear by this show up and down.
Yep.
And every clip I've seen of it, again, just it like triggers this inner depression where it's like, how depressing is this show going to be? But so many people are glowing in its praise that I had... If you even mention it, it's like, okay, it's going on the list.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be in the right headspace. So it's like, if things are maybe not great in the world for you at a given moment, put it off. This is how I do. I cycle through things depending on how my mood is. But I thought we were going to get Shoresy season two, but I was apparently wrong.
Justified for you and me is probably higher on the level of, oh my God.
Yeah.
However, if Justified's the crown jewel.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to jump into Righteous Gemstones or what's the other show you love?
Succession. It just ended recently. But yes. That's
so,
the summer. Yeah.
But so while I can't speak to those shows because I'm not watching them yet, I'll just defer to you on that.
Yeah.
So if it's Justified is the apex.
Yeah.
And then you have some supporting jewels.
Yeah.
Shorzy season 2 is in there.
Yeah.
In July, I'm still flabbergasted at the volume of people who either have not watched it or don't unapologetically love it. I think it is maybe the greatest thing to happen to sports television ever.
I had thought mistakenly that was coming back this season. It's not part of this crop I'm talking about, but it's like at a point in time like this, like to have this crown jewel of Justified City Primeval, it's not like it's on a barren landscape. It's something that's here that we're really enjoying at a time when there's a lot of other great TV.
I do want to circle back because we got a couple more points on Justified. We got to go back, and I apologize in advance. It was one of those things where you look away at exactly the wrong time.
Okay.
And we're watching this thing together. I happened to get distracted for a second. My ears picked up Dewey. And then I hear you off in the distance yelling that it's Dewey Cox. Did we get a Dewey Cox reference and I missed it?
Dewey Crow. She said that.
I'm sorry, Dewey Crow.
And I yelled out Dewey Crow. So this is, yes.
And the other real big sort of like just had me cackling in my seat here. Then later when he, again, zigs when he's supposed to zag, he's got the judge's assistant in the car with him. They drive a distance. She makes a break for it, and I hear off in the distance, "You can't outrun a bullet." Can we please, for the love of all you find holy, can we please factor in, I don't care about endorphins, I don't care about stress levels, when is Hollywood, and if not human people in general, going to realize you do not outrun a bullet? Especially if your serpentining skills aren't on point, and all Game of Thrones fans out there will remember, Rickon, you have to serpentine. You can't run the straight line. So the moment she makes a break for it, it's like, you're dead. I just noticed the time. You are an absolute trooper for hanging in this late. So let's do a quick little rapid fire segment here real quick.
What do you got in mind?
First of all, shout out to anybody from Detroit. I just need to know, as someone in my 40s, that means that in the 80s and 90s, I was in school. I was a kid. One of the things that I remember vividly is rocking Cross Colors.
Mm-hmm.
And if somebody in Detroit can tell me, can confirm or deny, that a Cross Colors jacket is available in Detroit in 2023, you need to let me know. So that's just something selfish for me, because if Cross Colors are out there,
okay,
somebody on this side of the situation needs a pair of purple shorts, like, immediately. I'm just going to say something. I just want you to react to it.
Okay.
Anytime an established criminal of any stripe is sitting on a couch in a residence that is easy for authorities to find, and as soon as they bust through the door, guns drawn, their response is, "Took you long enough."
Yeah.
I'm already worried for how deep the villain goes.
Yeah.
He may not be the greatest criminal of all time, but don't sleep on him, because there's something not right in his head.
Well,
if he's just sitting there waiting.
In the Justified world, who did that put you in mind of immediately, that kind of a quip? Who did that make you think of? Who would have said something?
Oh, it's very Boyd. It's so Boyd.
Yes, it's very Boyd-like. You said it's a trope, and it's a trope specifically from this show that Boyd would have done any number of times. Matter of fact, we're probably sleeping on this. Boyd probably did say something like that at once. So that's the thing where it was meant to put us in mind of him. And again, Boyd, for all the different, you know, shadings of him and whatever, what's the one word you undeniably put on the man? Formidable. And that brands this man as formidable. So yes, that was a great call.
Now, I would say that if it was Boyd, he would not show up looking raggedy with some worn-out cowboy boots. He'd have a vest and a pocket watch, and he'd look pimping as all pimping.
Button to the top. Absolutely, yes.
Now, the next one I wanted to get into, I'm just going to recite the line, the two lines, that made me cackle out loud. I don't know if you caught that. Okay. And literally did that thing that some people do when something's so funny, mm-hmm. intentional or unintentional, that they will run out of the room. It's so funny.
Mm-hmm.
You ready?
Okay.
Yeah, I smoke weed to relax when I'm stressed. Well, you better get your hands on some really good
I don't know why I thought that you were going to make a parallel here and try to identify who the equivalent of Father Pat is on Justified City Primeval. Who would it be? Off, I don't. The short answer is nobody out of that cast. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm hoping if there's an answer, we just haven't met him yet.
We know what the landscape is as far as the top tier of characters. We're going to meet one or two others. I'm sure they're going to factor in to some degree. But essentially, this is the core of the ensemble.
With that being said,
mm-hmm.
the one little side note to that is,
okay.
while I'm sure you're correct, mm-hmm. I am still holding out hope that we will get a Jim Beaver type. One other thing I just kind of wanted to throw at you real quick. Okay. It's not so much a bullet point or anything.
Okay.
And maybe it's because I'm familiar with the actor.
Mm-hmm.
But I really like Sweetie.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just terrified of what's going to happen.
He feels like, and I'm trying to, like, he doesn't have any of the menace of, say, Devil. But he feels like the doomed functionary, doesn't he? The doomed sidekick.
I was going to say, Devil's probably the closest comparison, right?
Yeah, but, like, that was a guy where it was like, you know, he always talked bigger than he was and everything. Like
right.
And this guy is the opposite. He seems like a little bit scared of the circumstances, you know, but it's a thing where, he's sort of devil-like in that way. Maybe one other of Boyd's flunkies, but yeah, I mean, he's the sidekick who seems doomed, and then they're teasing out the deal with this defense lawyer of where, again, that because on the one level, you are meant to seriously root against her. She is somebody that is being set up as an obstacle of Raylan's, but it's one of those things where here's what I'm trying to think. Of her name. Was it Wendy Crow, the one that Alicia Witt played in season 5?
Yeah.
Okay. A thing of where Raylan was trying to flip her the whole season, and in the end, she did when, spoiler alert, she ends up shooting her brother's nards off. You get the sense that the arc may be the same, that Raylan may get to flip her at some point here, because she's already shown as being somewhat conflicted about the path that she's on.
I absolutely felt a way about Carolyn, the defense attorney.
Yeah.
All the way up until the point at which the writers wanted me to feel differently.
Yes.
Which is, again, a sign of good writing.
They're masters. They're masters.
But when she meets up with Sweetie and basically kicks Raylan and the other detective out, Wendell.
Yeah.
There's kind of a moment. It takes about 3 to 5 seconds. But there's an exchange.
Manziel's back in town.
I'm well aware. He came to see me, made it clear to me that if I wanted to keep you out of trouble, that I still represent him.
They're both reserved to the idea that, oh yeah, you should just move forward with that because this guy's crazy.
Yeah.
But you get the sense that, yeah, she's reluctant. This is... While I don't like her tactics and I think it's kind of cheap lawyer tricks,
yeah,
I have a feeling in the next episode we're going to start to become... She won't be in our corner necessarily, but we're going to start feeling a little differently about her. And that, ladies and gentlemen, will conclude our Justified City Primeval episodes 1 and 2 review and reaction show. Now, we would like to invite you to come back to our respective channels each week, as we'll be covering this show every step of the way. And with that, Rick, any final thoughts you'd like to add?
The entire Justified world, this is why I love talking about it with you, is that, again, you love to get in there in the weeds with me. You have the same approach to fandom I do of the constructive thoughts here. And that, you know, we're not homers. We're not blind homers shilling for it. But we have a love that is very pervasive of it, and it kind of oversets everything that we do of it. So a great approach to just be able to get on here every week, break it down, call it the way we see it. There's just nothing more to it than that. And we'll keep doing that. So thank you very much, Jason.
If it hasn't been effectively conveyed to this point, anything Justified, spinoffs included, is a labor of love for us, and we genuinely enjoy bringing you this content. For now, we're wrapped on Justified City Primeval Episode 1 and 2. We do hope to see you next time for Episode 3 and the rest of this series. Thanks for watching. You guys have a wonderful day.